Welcome to The Appetite, a podcast brought to you by Opal Food and Body Wisdom, an eating disorder treatment clinic in Seattle, Washington. On this podcast, we talk about all things food, body, movement, and mental health. I'm Dr. Lexi Giblin, a founder and executive director of Opal, and one of your hosts for today. I am sitting here with Ms. Kara Bozzi, who is my dear friend and co-founder and clinical director of Opal.
Hi, everyone.
And it's kind of awesome because we're sitting here today to talk to you about compulsive striving. And I'd say Kara and I are pretty major compulsive striving people. So we've done a lot of work in this area, I would say. And probably one of the reasons Opal is the way it is that Julie, Kara, and I are major strivers. So this is something we've really had to work on over the years of Opal to better take care of ourselves and not just keep on striving. Yeah. So maybe how about we start with just laying some of the groundwork for this conversation, and then we'll get into some more specifics. So Radically Open Dialectical Behavioral Therapy talks about two biotemperamentally driven, yet qualitatively different responses to stress. And one is avoidant coping, where you turn away from stressors to regulate your emotions, to kind of manage your emotions. So this is, you know, more of the procrastination approach. So avoiding the problem, not trying to pretend like it's not there, or delaying dealing with it. And then the other way of coping with stress is approach coping. And this is where you turn towards the problem, turn towards the stress to regulate your emotion or to decrease stress and work to prevent future stress. And over-controlled temperament styles, temperaments that tend to be more inhibited and careful, are more likely to use an approach coping style when under stress. So that gives you the lay of the land. So we're talking about today the approach coping style, when the approach coping style kind of goes wild. And I want to say, approach coping has been an amazing part of my life in some way. So I kind of have a love-hate relationship with approach coping. How would you see that for yourself, Kara?
Yeah, I would also consider it more of a love-hate relationship in the ways that it has worked for me and then the ways that it's worked against me.
Yeah. And sometimes I would say you have to compulsively strive. A lot of people are compulsively striving in order to survive, right? You have to get money, to get food, to get basics for your health. Their compulsive striving is necessary. And I wonder sort of when you think about, or maybe when we think about compulsive striving in our lives, where would we think, gosh, this is moving from an effective way of managing stressors to a more compulsive, excessive, rigid way of coping?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want me to give examples?
Yeah. Or
what would we be looking for?
What does it look like? Yeah. What does it look like to veer into compulsive striving? What might this look like?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of it crossing over into a problematic, it is a fine line. This is a gray area. But when one is getting very rigid of being kind of myopic and almost compulsive, obsessive about completing or about achieving or striving, so that rigidity, the not being able to pivot and move towards something else that's important. For example, when I'm under stress, I might feel like I have to respond to all my emails within the end of the day. And I kind of create this rule that has to happen, and kind of be irritated if anything disrupts that goal, even if the thing that disrupts that goal is I value a lot more, is more important to me, including like if it was related to being disrupted by my kids or doing something for social connection. So those are first that come to my mind. What about you, Lexi?
Well, I'm just like thinking about it in the eating disorder treatment context. What it looks like for our clients is often this, you know, setting a particular weight goal and then reaching that weight goal and then setting another weight goal that's even lower, reaching that one, then setting another lower one, and sort of never this never ending kind of search for some sort of endpoint or some sort of feeling that never comes.
So continuing to strive despite not reaching or tuning into kind of the satisfaction of completing a goal.
Yeah, like not stopping to celebrate and maybe just staying where you are for a little while and slowing down and sort of like when I'm in a major compulsive striving kind of place, it seems like it's just this pursuit of kind of a white rabbit that I may never reach. And it just feels like there's no actual endpoint where I'm going to feel such joy at having hit some sort of endpoint. It just becomes another goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like not stopping, no celebration point.
Yeah, just
that also makes
goal.
Me think of a flag of this being problematic would be exhaustion. And I think in that, what the example you're giving, I hear that and I'm exhausted, which I don't recognize sometimes my own exhaustion when I'm in it, but it could be that to not stop or slow down can obviously create exhaustion and even health problems, sicknesses, immune system decreasing.
Right, because you're just kind of overriding what your body's needing, right? There's something that's your anxiety is overriding any like attunement to your body.
Yeah, attunement to emotion, attunement to physiological body symptoms, right?
Yeah, it sort of comes like nothing's more important
than the goal.
Yeah, then the goal. And then I feel like it's seductive because you feel like if I finish this particular task or meet this particular goal, I'm finally going to feel satisfied. And then you get there, of course you don't, but then you feel like, oh, but I think this goal would really, if I meet this goal, this one will really, this will be the one that allows me to rest. And it kind of always feels like that. But after years and years of doing it, you kind of get wise to, wait, I don't think I'm ever going to feel that thing that I'm trying to find. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there is an aspect of the hustle for your worth when you're trying to prove yourself as well could be another red flag, which I would say, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge kind of privilege that comes with that is, you know, we are in a hierarchical society around systemically people having more worth than others. And so I think that's really hard of sort of this the being driven to be able to prove worth, prove adequacy, especially if you're in a marginalized group or have marginalized identities. How do you kind of not get caught up in that in some ways to prove that you're valuable and worthy, and to get the things that you want in life, right? It's hard in our system, how our system is set up in that way.
Yeah. Well, it seems like compulsive striving is often like there's a feeling of maybe there's shame that's kind of driving it, because there's basically you're feeling like who you are right now is not good enough. But if I did this thing, then I would be, you know, adequate. And it's sort of this attempt at reducing shame. Mm-hmm. And that seems like why it's so powerful, you know, mm-hmm. It has such a drive to it.
Yeah, like what is, I think one of the questions we could be asking ourselves in that is, what is this preventing us from feeling? Because I think for me, shame really resonates from a pattern of that compulsive striving earlier in my life. And not that it doesn't show up now, but I would say what's more common now in my compulsive striving is that I might not want to feel other things or attend to other emotions or what might be going on, because it's in some ways a relief to focus on a goal and check something off the to-do list and be a distraction.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like this feeling of when you're not working on a clear goal or achieving something, then you're in just there's a lot of space and a lot more. It can, for to me, it kind of can feel like there's a loss of meaning. Like the goal itself gives you this meaning. And so when I don't have, I've worked on that, the compulsive striving piece of, you know, like when I'm not striving, learning to find meaning in the slowdown. And that there's not always the goal of life is not achievement of goals. In some ways, of course, that's part of life, but I just lose perspective when I'm in that. Like, is that really what my life is about, is achievement? And I feel like I do a lot better when I have my one foot in the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's a good stand-in just to distract, really. And I think when I'm in one of those cycles, in some ways, it can be a little more silly what I'm trying to keep achieving and fill up. You lose perspective. I think you lose creativity. You lose somewhat of a bigger sense of yourself. Like one thing that's coming to my mind is a period of time where I took a month off of work, and I actually had excitement and fear going into that of what was I going to discover when I took this big part of my life out. And yet, and not that the whole time was easy, but I think one thing I recognized is the importance of the withdrawing from the doing and the contemplation, the rest, and how that breeds creativity. When we're bored, we get to connect to things that we wouldn't let our mind wander to, and we can see things in the world. We can see things, like for me, I got to see a lot in nature that I wouldn't normally notice because my head wasn't on that hamster wheel of filled with thoughts. And I know that's somewhat what, you know, why meditation is such a helpful tool, is to, what can we discover when we're present and not filled with thoughts constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And I'm thinking about how whenever we are compulsive, we're in a intense compulsive striving zone of like, do more, try harder, that there's sort of this dream that we have about what it will be like once we achieve the goal, like what life will have. And with eating disorders, of course, there's this often a fantasy about the life that you will have if you are look a particular way at a particular weight. So it seems like there's always there's a fantasy that is part of the compulsive striving. I'm going to feel this particular way. And then of course what we see every day, you know, at Opal is that it is not getting them where they want to go, but they are struggling to no longer do the compulsive striving, even though they are not arriving where they thought they would.
Could you say more, Lexi, about what are in recognizing the compulsive striving and that it's not creating kind of a meaningful outcome, even in the context of treatment? What are the skills, or what then would we recommend, or what skills or treatment would we offer as an alternative?
Yeah, I mean, it often, I think at Opal, it looks like it's not a treatment time, but I actually think it's one of the biggest parts of treatment for a lot of our clients. And that is what we call the art of non-productivity and pleasure. So this just learning, strengthening that muscle of just being without doing, and learning to find out what brings you pleasure and do more of that. This compulsive striving sort of is like, who cares about rest? Who cares about pleasure? This is about achieving a goal. So that work of kind of giving yourself permission to have time of rest, to be non-productive and seek pleasure.
What does that actually look like at Opal?
We have a break time that's called the Art of Non-Productivity. And it seems like people are doing all sorts of things during that time. Some, I heard the other day, someone singing in there, which I was so happy to hear that. Right? Just hanging out and singing. I think I see a lot of people just hanging out and talking, playing cards, just slowing down, turning off the doing part of themselves and learning to just rest and just be.
So there's no guidance per se. It's the fact is it's a carved out period of time that's the whole intention, and that kind of all the other productive tasky things in some ways are blocked by this.
We try.
By this hour or half hour. So I wonder, that in how that gets kind of translatable. And it does actually make me think of some of the individual work I've done with over-controlled clients around making that recommendation of having daily doses of time that is not intended for productivity. So whether that's there is some structure offered by an app on meditation, or whether that is guidance of breathing or connecting to the five senses or looking out the window of what you see outside. But I think the repetition, it's like building a muscle of that repetition of being able to be tune out and turn away from a to-do list in your head even, and building that muscle. I know that's been effective for me, is to even be able to build that ability to do it.
Right. Yeah. And one thing we've found is just saying to our clients, you just get to be non-productive for a half an hour and just be, that's a little too wide open, you know? So what we've done is kind of focused on more pleasure activism during that time, so that, you know, what feels good right now? Does it feel good to close your eyes? Does it feel good to meditate? Does it feel good to talk to your friend? What feels good, and kind of following pleasure as a guide? And of course, with this conversation, it's opened up a lot of feelings about pleasure and about kind of guilt related to experiencing pleasure. So, you know, that's the cool thing about compulsive striving work, is when you turn off the compulsive striving, what do you find underneath?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And I hear that as then you're giving some guidance of what options could people even do in an alternative? Because I would imagine, and I think of our clients, they might not even know what that looks like, of what are other things that guide. How do you even tune into what pleasure feels like if you have denied pleasure for a long time? And I know that's a theme of folks with eating disorders.
Exactly, right? It's like the struggle to identify what even sounds good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if they do identify what sounds good, allowing themselves permission to do that thing and if they do that thing, you know, dealing with guilt that might come up or lack of worthiness.
Mm-hmm. I think too, what I've noticed with our clients is that guilt would often, if they weren't in the context of treatment, would prevent them from trying. And so I think like what a lot of treatment is support to do something that's really hard to do given the emotions that come up with it. So if this is something that you identify as a listener with, I think that accountability or that structure is really important because of the feelings that come up associated with doing something different, and how that's really, it makes it really hard to do the different thing.
Right. Yeah. It's sort of this, you approach coping on one hand by doing the thing, but you're avoiding coping by avoiding emotion with, you know, so what's going to come up when you slow down is an unknown and can be really scary for folks.
Yeah. Are there other skills that you can think of that would help somebody develop an alternative to the compulsive striving? One thought that comes up to my mind is, again, the opposite seems like giving perspective giving. And I know this is kind of one of those therapy tools, but that idea of how would you want to be remembered by in your death? I know that's a morbid, in some ways could be considered a morbid exploration, but we see it as really beautiful, a beautiful invitation of how do you want to be remembered? Because it gets you synced up with your highest values. And do you want to be remembered for checking off your to-do list every day, probably won't matter much in that moment. And so recentering on what's most important and then being able to ask yourself, is that aligned with what I'm doing in this moment? And sometimes we have to do busy work, obviously, but yeah, even the busy work, is that connected to something that's aligned with our values?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, like the values work of, you know, if achievement is an important value, a goal, then what can kind of stand beside it? Because sometimes compulsive striving just takes over and the person like loses sight of their interest in connection with others and the greater kind of meaning of life.
Yeah. So what are good questions we could ask ourselves to become more aware if we're in an unhelpful compulsive striving?
I always think of the question, am I hustling for my worth? So when it starts to feel connected to worthiness, I think that's a great one for me.
Yeah.
Can you think of any?
When was the last time I rested? When was the last time for me, the practice that I don't do daily, but I would, it's my intention and I like to, I've now found that I like it, is laying down and really looking out the window. I've really ended up connecting with that practice.
Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking like questions like, am I anxious about what I might do with my life if I don't stay busy with striving? Sort of what's behind the striving? Am I avoiding uncomfortable emotions by intensely approach coping?
And like we said earlier, after I do achieve a goal, do I celebrate? Do I stop? Do I celebrate? Is there a recognition for that goal and a chance, an opportunity to experience the pleasure of that?
Yeah, celebrate and then maybe not set a goal for a little while. Let yourself just kind of recover from the hard work you just did rather than setting another goal immediately.
Mm-hmm. Another good question is, am I satisfied?
Yeah, when it starts to become a hamster wheel kind of feeling.
Or do I need to do this now? That's a good one for me. Do I have to do this now? That one is a question I could ask every day. It's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And even asking myself that question, I still can say yes, but to give myself enough of a pause to say, is this necessary? Do I have to? Is there something else that could take my attention?
Yeah, a related one I'm thinking of is like, am I taking life too seriously? Yeah, and it's compulsive striving is particularly tough because our culture loves compulsive striving and rewards it in terms of money, in terms of status, in terms of respect, in all kinds of ways. So it's particularly seductive in that way as well.
Yeah, even you saying that made me immediately think of the nature of social media, and especially for folks where that is a big part of their profession or mission, how it's hard to get out of that pattern of moving towards for fear that would impact potentially livelihood.
Right. I hope today that at least we've given you some language maybe for this that is so common for so many of us and such a big part of our lives, but this difference between compulsive striving and striving or doing. So I hope this connected for you. Thank you to Jackstraw Cultural Center for sound engineering. Thanks to Aaron Davidson for the Appetites original music and to David Bozzi for editing. If you want to learn more about Opal's programming, go to opalfoodandbody.com. Until next time.